Well, welcome back to another episode of Spam, Spam, Spam Humbug. This is episode 151 of the podcast. And we have another interesting discussion for you, although I have to apologize because I completely forgot to do the little game segment at the end of this recording session. It was getting kind of late and we were all getting pretty tired. So I'll have to try and remember to pick that up the next time we do one of these conversations, which will either be in a couple of weeks' time or later than that, depending on if I get back to doing Through the Moongate episodes anytime soon. At any rate, in this discussion, we start by talking about, cheating in X-Wing and other flight sim games and escort missions and why they suck so bad. Except in, like, Galaxy on Fire 2. Pretty good in that one. Talk about some other mobile games, get in a few shots at Shroud of the Avatar, because why not? And we talk about some of the other MMOs that have come and gone, or come and diminished, but still exist today. I enthuse very briefly about a new controller I picked up for my iPhone. And then we actually kind of go from, like, Stardew Valley to actual gardening. There's an interesting topical shift that happens in the middle there before we get back to talking about things like Gothic and Ultima 9 and more Gothic and tech issues with Ultima 9 that Gothic just got right. There was a lot of time spent on like the Gothic series of games and on Skyrim and issues with NBC Pathfinding. And then we get back to MMOs a little bit, talk about, you know, some of the pitfalls or challenges of letting kids play online, whether it's good or bad, you know, how much to shield them from. Consideration for me, at least, being, you know, a parent of several young children, which leads actually into a discussion about like what school is like these days, changes and similarities, things that have shifted in response to the ongoing pandemic. And then kind of right at the end, you know, Golem Dragon shows up, talks about Outriders. I talk about core games, which is kind of like Roblox, but with Unreal Engine 4. And, you know, just a good, mostly gaming focused discussion, actually. Really, really nice chat to have everybody on board. And of course, as always, this episode of the podcast is brought to you by our Patreon backers, patreon.com/ultimacodex. If you want to join that hearty crew, thank you to everyone who supports the podcast and the codex by that means. And as always, a hearty thank you to our co-producers, Seth, Goldenflame, Dominic, Violation, Helgriff, Gronk, Pascal, and Thorwan. All right, that's enough for me. Let's get on with the show.
Now, one thing I wanted to ask you, if you did this, because this is a trick I used a lot with Three Houses, recruiting, you know, making friends with and recruiting characters from other houses, not so much so you can use them, but to keep the other faction from using that character. For example, I went to the trouble of recruiting Mercedes from Blue Lion because she's an amazing healer, and I didn't want them to have a healer.
Mm-hmm. Well, I haven't done that. But I am what you'd call a heavy grinder, so usually I am 10 levels above the recommended level for the missions I play.
Holy crap, Sticks. Okay.
Sometimes 15 or 20 levels above.
Yeah, you're officially a better grinder than I am. I'm impressed. You're not worthy.
I'm really bad about not grinding. I'm just like, well.
Yeah, I always grind a lot on Fire Emblem games.
I have such a bad history with games. Like, I would, growing up, I was like, I just want to know the story. So I would just do the walkthrough and all that stuff. And I think I cheated my way through X-Wing. I remember flying in X-Wing and I had the lasers set up where they would automatically home in on the target. So like I'm flying through in the X-Wing and like just constantly hitting R after I hit gets the closest target. And I just keep hitting R after I keep blowing up TIE fighter after TIE fighter. I was like the super X-Wing pilot.
Lock S-foils in cheat position.
Yes. Yes, 100%. I am not, you know, I was a gamer without honor growing up. But I have honor now, sort of. I don't really cheat.
I just hated those escort missions, X-Wing or Starfleet.
Oh, man.
Escort missions hate in literally every game genre ever.
It's like they go so slow, and you're like, okay. You finally get to the point where you're almost done, and then someone come, you get like these three enemies come in, and they just blow it all up, and you're like, all right, I'm done.
I'm trying to protect you. Don't go over there.
Escort missions in Galaxy on Fire and Galaxy on Fire 2 were passable.
Never heard of those before.
They are flight sims for mobile. So Galaxy on Fire was originally developed. It was like a Java game. So I think you could play it like either in your browser or on Windows, but it was ported to mobile, made great use of the gyroscope for controls. But it was very, very limited. There was like about 5 minutes of story, and then it was just like the Galaxy had like 100 systems, but it was the same basic system design and the same three missions available in every system. But the escort missions weren't bad because you could kind of just, you know, gently float along next to these freighters that you were escorting, and then there would be like two or three waves of enemies that would come at you, and it was just nice and simple. Galaxy on Fire 2 shrunk the Galaxy in terms of the number of systems, really overhauled the gameplay, built out the story a fair bit, and is still one of my favorite mobile games to play to this day.
The same team that did Everspace, right? Is it the same people?
Well, yes and no. So
okay.
Galaxy on Fire was developed by Fish Labs, and then Deep Silver bought Fish Labs. And then the original people, like a couple of the original creators behind Galaxy on Fire were just like, forget this. They went and started Rockfish Games, I want to say, and made Everspace.
That sounds right. I really enjoyed Everspace at one point. I played it for probably a good month or so. But like with a roguelike, there's only so far you can go. It will go forever. And even that's even written into the plot of that game. Like you're not even like your clone keeps populating after you die. Like they literally write it into the game. But Everspace 2, from what I hear, is supposed to be a little bit more traditional. Like you'll have an actual story. It'll be probably a little bit more like Privateer, which I think
they wanted to like
early access. Yeah.
So. Anyways, yeah, those games are well worth playing. They play pretty well on the Switch as well. Everspace is on there now.
It's a very, like, I could see it working really well on consoles.
Yeah. But what always struck me was just like those guys that when they moved to mobile, like they nailed control. It is a game that just takes complete advantage of the fact that it is being played on a phone. And it's just the best.
I think I tried it once, but I haven't tried it any more than that. Does it use like tilt controls and things like that?
Yes, it can do the on-screen controls too, but if you enable the tilt controls, it is just,
I can imagine it working pretty well. Every now and then, I wish that the mobile experience was more consistent with that. I think that a lot of the cross development has gotten better in the past few years. But man, I remember mobile gaming like... Mobile gaming 6 years ago when Richard Garriott was talking about how he wanted his new RPG to be mobile, that did not instill confidence in me at the time. But
I think that if he had gone that road, it probably would have been better.
Well, if he had had to limit himself, yes, I would agree with that. But here we are again, possibly trashing Shroud, so...
So like every episode, right? Carry on.
Indeed.
Yeah, the weekly, the weekly, monthly, bi-monthly.
Whatever this is.
Ultima Funeral.
We could call it the 2 minutes hate.
Yeah, there's that.
I mean, technically, can you do an autopsy of something that is technically still going?
Well, that's called vivisection. And yes, you can. It's frowned upon, but
boy, I just everything I see, it's just like another level of like, wow, really? Shroud.
If we want to talk about, you know, doing an autopsy on something that's still technically alive, we could always bring out the fact that EverQuest still has subscribers despite being on its third or fourth publisher now.
Okay, but EverQuest is good.
I would like to provide a proviso there. EverQuest is good in the lens of the 1999 gamer who has literally seen nothing else like it.
So every MMO grognard ever who is not probably even aware that other games outside of the MMO that they are a grognard for exist.
Indeed. Speaking of MMOs and Grognardery, I'm mudding while we play, while we talk.
Carry on. I am setting up Minecraft for controller support, kind of, maybe, possibly.
I thought Minecraft innately had it because Microsoft.
Yes, but I actually have a controller for my phone now, so I treated myself to a Backbone controller.
Well, speaking of controllers, speaking of multiplayer gaming too, I guess, but my wife and I have started to do local co-op with Stardew Valley. That's been kind of fun.
Ah,
we're both working on the same farm, which beforehand we she could play it, of course, but we couldn't play it at the same time. And that's kind of the cool thing about it. You can it split screens and you can actually, at first I wasn't sure it was going to work because it was like really zoomed out. But in the options, you can zoom the view in. So that made it a lot better. But now we're actually teaming up. We're upgrading. Like right now, my character, my guy is the one who does all the farming, typically. And all right. Whereas she will go into the caves and get all the resources and mine stuff in there. And right now she's getting her pickaxe upgraded and I'm getting my hoe upgraded. So we're switching roles right now. You get to keep like all your stuff. The weird thing is you share a bank account though. So it's kind of challenging because you're pulling from the same pool with what you're upgrading. So I don't know if any of you have played Stardew Valley, but it's basically Harvest Moon. But like, for example, it takes about 2000 gold to upgrade your backpack. So you get more inventory space. Well, we had to do that twice because, you know, once for her, once for me. So it kind of, it brings a little bit more tact into how do we want to spend this money, et cetera, et cetera. That's been pretty fun.
Almost like real life.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing with games like Stardew Valley. It's like, oh, what kind of cool game did you play? Oh, I play this game where I go and I farm, I plant seeds and sell my produce and go talk to people. And
what does your backyard look like? Yeah. What does your real backyard look like? Oh, I'll mow that tomorrow.
Let's not talk about that.
So I'll buy the backpack for me and maybe I'll think about getting the backpack for you. You'll survive.
Actually, we've been doing a lot of work on our front yard, planting a bunch of stuff over the past month or so. Like, this is not in Stardew Valley, but in real life, planting a bunch of stuff. And I don't think I've ever shown or cared as much about, how my yard looked. I think part of that is really like home ownership is really part of that. It's like, if I was renting this place, I would not care. I wouldn't care. I never cared when we rented, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, there is something about that. I mean, actually, we tended to care even when we did rent, but it is, yeah. Well, I mean, but like, you know, we liked having the kids out playing in the yard, so keeping the grass somewhat at bay was good. We liked having a garden, so, you know, making sure that we had garden plots, that was good. But of course, now that we own the place, it's even more onus to just step up and make sure that things are good. I was going to actually wind up spending a lot of time tomorrow out in the yard, but the weather is now looking inclement with possible snow. So painting the playset and putting a new roof on it will have to wait.
Yeah, a little bit hard to paint when you've got snow coming down, I imagine.
Little bit. But, you know, like this is kind of when we start to ramp up for spring. So like we have an indoor greenhouse that just got set up again. There's already, you know, my wife has already started a bunch of seeds. So we've got little morning glories and sunflowers sprouting up.
We've done some transplanting. Somebody put some, how come I can't think of what exactly that was? Oh man, the stuff that grows and it looks like grapes, but it's not, it's purple. I can't think of this.
I don't know.
Anyway, we switched that with, it was in some really random place and the roots were very deep and very long and I had to cut them with the shovel and get that all out. And then we transplanted that with some azaleas that were basically dying in one particular area of the lawn. And we moved those over to a place where they're going to get a lot more sun. So hopefully they'll perk up. I'm a big fan of azaleas. But yeah, again, it's funny what you do like, as an adult, that like as a kid you hated doing. Like my mom and dad would, my dad would drag me outside to have me work on the yard with him, and I hated it. And as an adult, I'm like, you know, this is useful. This is good.
I can raise plants in a garden. I don't particularly enjoy the practice of gardening. Like I am good at it when I have to do it, but I don't enjoy particularly doing it. Mowing the lawn, though, it's a little bit different. Getting the edges just nice and trimming back hedges and whatnot. Like those are things that I actually, you know, and anything I think the thing that I don't necessarily enjoy about gardening is I can do it very well. I can tend plants very well. Can get a good tomato crop every year, but I just don't find it meditative so much. Whereas, you know, whether I'm mowing the lawn or trimming stuff or whatever else, like if I'm just kind of out there with pruning shears or whatever, I can get into this more sort of meditative kind of rhythm with it. And it's just, this is nice.
I get you. Like even if you're doing push mowing, it can be a time of reflection.
There's a wonderful consistency to the actions, and that kind of frees up the operating cycles.
Exactly. Yeah, you're oh man, okay, the guy who was following me, I totally ditched him. Okay, I'm playing Gothic 3. There's this guy named Copper at the first rebel encampment that basically says I'll follow you, go wherever you want to go. And
whoops,
I realized he was I realized we were outside of an orc encampment, and since he's in rebel outfits, they will immediately, you know, attack and kill him on sight. And I just decided before they got there, I said, you know, I talked to him and I said, hey, go back. He's like, okay, you know where to find me. And I just bolted and I just found his body. He's dead.
Oh,
which Gothic 3 are you playing? Because I see two on GOG. Forsaken Gods, Enhanced Edition, and the regular one. Is there a difference between them?
Okay, so Forsaken Gods is like the DLC. From what I've understood, it's kind of pointless. Like, it's not what you would want. The cool thing about the GOG version, though, is that it is all patched up. There was a community patch that came out years ago that addresses a ton of problems, like optimizes it incredibly. Like, originally when it came out, it was like, crazy slow, like to the point where it's like it should not be this slow. But the community patch fixes all that. So Forsaken Gods is like, from everything I've never played it, but I've just always heard that it's kind of a waste of time. And then Gothic 4 is not even really Gothic. It's not even the same universe. But if you get it on GOG, you'll have all the stuff. Now the big thing to me, when I loaded up on my system, it did this little thing where like, we have to build up the shader cache. I'm like, okay, I click okay on it and it just sits there and it never does anything. It's just a black screen. You have an alt control delete out of it. And what I had to do was actually change one of the INI files to where it does not, you know, launches windowed and not full screen. And if you launch it windowed and just leave it alone, it will do what it needs to do. And then you can quit it, go and switch back in that INI file to full screen and then load it up and it loads up fine. I have no idea. This is a pretty new problem. I think the earliest I've seen of it, I think someone posted about it on their forums in like 2019. So if you happen to get it, that's, you know, just FYI.
Yeah, because I saw the two, the Gothic, I see two Gothic threes. I'm like, oh, great. Which one? Do I?
Yeah. I think
look of the first one. That was cool.
Yeah. Gothic 3 is really nice from a graphics perspective. It lacks a little bit of the subtlety of the first two. I'm not as big of a fan of the gameplay, and the game world is too big for its own britches. It's like you can easily get lost in the shuffle and like forget about like, okay, what was I supposed to be doing? And literally get a quest log that's so big and so long that you have no idea, like, you know, so it's fun. I like it, but it's not quite as enjoyable. Gothic 2 is pretty much considered to be the high point of the series, where the gameplay is pretty much perfected. You've got some cool factions that you can join or decide which one you want to join. And it's all sort of like honor based as far as how you join these factions. Like you go to this place, and they're like, oh, well, you know, you don't just get armor by joining up or, you know, choosing to join up. You've got to do some stuff. You got to impress some people in the town. So a lot of it is like social in terms of the way that works out, which is kind of Ultima in a way. I mean, there's a lot of Ultima DNA in it.
Well, and that was kind of always what, you know, that's Piranha Bytes, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, because, and they have been pretty open in the past. They don't cite it really so much now. I don't think they've ever like really floated it in regard to, say, Elex. But especially with the Gothic games, you know, they were quite open back in the day about, you know, pointing to the Ultima games as inspiration, including Ultima 9. Like, really, you know, you play the original, you play Ultima 9 and then you play the original Gothic and you're like, this is where RPGs should have gone. Like, you know, like this is the progression and this is how it really should have been. And it was in terms of, you know, where the Gothic series went, but in terms of where other Western developed RPGs went, you didn't really do that, you know?
Well, I can remember people even saying when Gothic came out, like, this is what Ultima 9 should have been. And really, I tend to think if they had had more time with Ultima 9, they probably would have had things like, you know, you go into someone's house and they come in there and like, what are you doing? Get out of here. You know, or they would have had, you know, day and night schedules. Like, I mean, even the interviews you've done, Kenneth, have kind of shown the people that made it, they wanted to do those things. Mm-hmm. But just, you know, one thing led to another.
Well, I mean, it literally just comes down to, you know, time, right? Like time and technology, right? Like they had all of these great things. And actually most of the systems that, you know, we complain were missing in Ultima 9 were built for it at one point. It's just that either performance really sucked or they could never get a particular thing. Like NPC schedules were stripped out largely because they couldn't get them to behave right. Even though, you know, Bill Randolph was just like, it doesn't matter. Like, you know, the party, right? The party got stripped out because the follow pathfinding was never quite right, right? They hadn't really come up with the idea of non-walkable, like of marking certain bits of terrain non-walkable, right? And so the NPC would get itself into all kinds of weird trouble when it was trying to have party members follow the avatar. And, you know, Bill Randolph's suggestion was laughed out of the room, but he was right. You know, his thought was just, well, like, it doesn't matter. Like, you know, if the avatar like turns their back on the NPC for like on the other party member for more than like half a second, just boop, teleport them. Right. Which a lot of games do these days, but you know, the suggestion was not received well. And
they'll do it. These days they'll do it like right in front of your face. You don't even have to turn around.
Yeah. Well, I always liked Ultima 6's solution for that. Ultima 7 kind of does that. I love Ultima 6's solution because if the other party members get too far away from you, even if you like, I mean, okay, Ultima 6 will teleport the party. Like if you lock a party member in the room and then just keep walking away from them, eventually it will pop them out of the room. And once you get a certain distance away, when they run to catch up to you, they are like super speed. They are completely ignoring the turn-based system.
Yeah,
so
same on Ultima 7, I think.
Yeah.
They even teleport ahead of you and say, aha!
Teleporting party members has been a thing in action RPGs for decades, though. Take Diablo 2. If you get too far ahead of your follower, they'll teleport to you. Sometimes in front of you.
Oh, yeah. Neverwinter Nights, my party members are constantly popping in front of me as I'm trying to run. Get in my way. Yep. I gotta stop. Everyone here? Okay, let's move forward now.
I have like Mass Effect on my online server.
Yep.
For pets and summons. Oh.
I think Mass Effect does it a little bit better because, like, they must still do the teleport, but, like, I notice that if I do get separated from my party, they'll reappear, but they won't, like, pop in right next to me. They'll, like, appear a short distance away in the general direction that they were. So that, you know, if I do happen to look back, I see them running up behind me again. But yeah, you know, like Bill's point at the time that he was trying to make to Origin was like, look, this is fine. Like they don't actually need to take every step between them and the avatar. Like we can just move them on up, pop them back into place, and it's fine. And he's not wrong, but yeah, they didn't go for it. And so they wound up stripping out a lot of the systems that they couldn't quite get right by the time that they just had to ship the game, because it was already running way, way behind. And, you know, with another... And Gothic is basically, yeah, you know, to Clortos's earlier point, Gothic is basically like that, but like a year or two later, can't remember when Gothic came out. I want to say 2000, but I'm going to check myself on that. And 2001. Gothic came out in 2001. And yeah, like they, you know, so it's kind of one of those things. It's like Gothic is basically Ultima 9 with an extra 18 months and benefit of hindsight. But then again, that's kind of the way a lot of tech works, I suppose, and a lot of games.
And even in Skyrim, I mean, you have companions, various companions that follow you, and they do their best to follow the path that you did. But when you go to a different cell, they'll just pop in right in, right behind you. Whoa, there you are. So this is just do what you got to do to make it work.
Yep. Because at the end of the day, I mean, yes, it's a little bit immersion breaking, but if overall the game is good enough, nobody's going to care, right? NPCs pop in all the time in WoW or wherever. No one cares because they're just having too much fun playing WoW.
Well, the only ones that would care realistically would be people that play, for example, like Looking Glass games. Like if you're looking for an immersive sim, then yeah, like things that break the immersion are by nature going to mess things up. But even, you know, even with Thief, like there's so many things that like in the abstract, you just sort of accept. I don't know.
I'm glad you mentioned enemies not showing up within, you know, visual or audio distance of a player in an MMO, because that's actually something that we exploited. The role players, you see, I used to play City of Heroes a lot, and the Virtue server of the various servers was very much the role play heavily preferred server, meaning that it was not uncommon to see people breaking out with their character's specific flavor of shtick during a dungeon run, during a mission. And sure, if you went to certain spots like that were, you know, major parts of the game that where certain supergroups hung out or certain places made their roost, they would get mad at you for breaking their immersion and threaten to call the GMs on you for harassing them. Even if you were doing something as simple as going to a vendor or something.
Bah.
The thing is, that game had the mechanic where if you had an NPC or a player within, you know, NPCs, enemies could not spawn within a certain radius of a player. So there were some very, very popular people in the game who wanted to have a very, very public in-character wedding. Was happening part of their supergroup. So one thing we did was we strategically all around the place that they decided out in the middle of a bad part of the area where there was gravity problems and there was literally a floating island right above the city, is happened to be where they wanted to have their wedding. However, the place was full of really nasty wandering monsters. So what we did, me and a lot of the group went up there and stationed ourselves around the floating island. So, you know, with just enough distance to where monsters couldn't spawn, so we could get the entire wedding party up there and have their whole RP wedding in peace.
Gotcha.
However, on the downside of that whole thing, and, you know, the heavy, as in people were took their RP seriously, and it, as in if you spoke out of character in front of people who were role players, they would look at you. They would look at you like you just kicked a puppy, which I found out the hard way because I went to go talk to one of the level up NPCs and get my new skills and stuff. And they just happened to be having it, or they just happened to be having a big powwow meeting, whatever they were doing, right on the dais or around the dais where the NPC for leveling up in that part of the city was. And I was told, "You're bothering our role play, leave, or we're calling the GMs on you." I said, "I'm just trying to play the game."
Brutal.
Well, the role players on that community took themselves way too seriously. I should know, I was one of them.
It's a thing. This is probably one of those reasons why it's like, yeah, we try. Well, I mean, my wife and I differ on this somewhat, but, you know, when it comes to like what we let the kids do online, for example, right? There's a lot of, you know, we differ a little bit on like, well, how much do we allow them to do multiplayer? Can they do public servers? Can they not do public servers? She's very, very against any and all of that because, yeah, she doesn't want to like them to touch any of that toxicity. And I'm a little more lenient with some things. Like Among Us, for example, just went to Among Us just took a cue from Apex Legends. Because now the default, I don't even know if you can have like just freeform chat in Among Us anymore. Like now my daughter informs me that all of the discussion, whenever a body is reported and an emergency meeting is called, all the discussion is basically just canned responses.
Well, as we all know, Among Us is basically just Werewolf or Mafia plus some accoutrement.
Yes.
So much of that sort of game is the psychology. Not allowing people to get into the character kind of detracts, in my opinion.
In a way. I mean, I think people still do. Like, at least based on my observation of my own children playing the game, they still seem to, you know, very much get into their roles. And it's funny because, like, different people that I know, different kids that I know who play it are like, there's some, my daughter's scout group really likes playing Among Us now and again. Funnily enough, they were also big fans of like when we could actually have like in-person overnight camps, Werewolf was a favorite campfire game. So the fact that they have adopted Among Us really does not come as any kind of surprise because you're right. It's pretty much exactly that. Some of the complexity stripped out, but not a lot. And it's just funny watching them play it because like there's some of them who, if they get imposter, they will do everything they can to like out themselves immediately so that they just like instantly get voted off. They hate being the imposter. And then there's other ones who are, you know, quite gleefully happy to, you know, successfully murder all of the rest of the troop.
Always expect the really, really nice person, the really kind, sweet, innocent person that you know for a fact is a saint in real life to be the killiest asshole in a game like that.
Mm.
Because nobody expects them to have the, you know, to have the stomach to be a murderer.
Yep. And it's funny too, because like my daughter informs me that, you know, her class will play it over lunch. They'll just like set up a little co-op game in the classroom and play it over lunch. My house school has changed since I was in. But, it's, this is better than, you know, hiding behind the skate shack smoking, but whatever.
I wonder what
Clotos.
I was just going to say, I wonder what schools are like these days. Like, I don't even really have a concept of that.
Well, I mean, in some respects, like,
I can't imagine it being very similar to when I was in school, but I'm sorry.
Well, yeah and no. Yeah and no.
Yes and no, yeah.
Like, I can only speak to, you know, the Canadian reality, which is obviously going to, you know, be different than what you're going to find in some respects is going to be different than you're going to find in, you know, other parts of the world. Most of you are probably US based if I had to guess, except maybe Drax. But like my wife and I have kind of made sure that we're able, even now, actually, like, you know, despite the heightened restrictions around who can be in the school and whatnot, like we've still kind of found ways to insinuate ourselves into the school community in ways that do let us have a little bit of building access from time to time. So like at my daughter's junior high school, there's a box by the office. And if the students have like anything at all that they want to pray for, they can just write it on a piece of paper and put it in the box. And then I lead a group that comes in once a month, collects all of this, and we actually go through the intentions of all the students. We'll just meet in the chapel and pray through all the intentions of the students, which is really, really cool for a number of reasons. Because, well, one, I get to actually walk into the school and kind of just get a little bit of a feel for what's going on. But two, it's kind of a way for us to take the pulse of where the kids are at. Because it's a Catholic junior high school. And so, of course, like religion is one of the courses that the kids do take. And it's the religion teachers that kind of quarterback this whole notion of, well, if there's anything weighing on you, like just someone will pray for it. Just write it down, put it in the box. Someone will come and pray for it. But the thing is, the students actually are often extremely frank with what they write down. So in addition to the fact that I get to just walk into the school and kind of just see what things are like going on in there, it's a way for somebody to have some extra eyes on what the kids are thinking. Because, and I mean, some of the times they're just, you know, some of the times there's not a lot of thought that gets put into it. I mean, for the last almost year now, it's basically just been, there's, you know, about half of what we cover is people wanting COVID to end, which I totally understand. But now and again, you know, you get somebody who just pours it all out onto this little piece of paper in your hand, and you're just like, whoa, like.
Which is probably something that they wouldn't do to you directly if you asked. I asked
right.
My kids, how was your day? They go, fine.
Exactly. And like, and I mean, sometimes the kids are dealing with stuff, man. Like they are just dealing with stuff. And for the most part, everything is kept confidential. If we find something that's like genuinely concerning, you know, then that one we'll set that paper aside. The school does actually have a way of not entirely de-anonymizing who submitted the prayers, but they do have a way of knowing at least what homeroom it probably came from. And so then they can kind of, you know, go to the teacher and be just like, hey, look, like, what have you seen? So it's kind of a way for them to intervene in like really, really serious stuff. But for the most part, you know, like right, actually they're just, most of them are just here with me right now. You know, there's one of these several bags that's kind of just here in the shelf by my feet, has all of this year's prayer intentions tucked away in it. And probably at the end of June, me and the prayer group are going to meet and we're going to have us a bonfire. And all of, you know, all of these intentions are going to just get, we'll burn them. Because that confidentiality is, you know, really, really important. But so anyways, that's one thing. But then also like my daughter, we're really lucky with all of our kids that they just will tell us everything. So, you know, we get to hear about all the stuff that they're doing in school day in and day out. And it's kind of funny because, you know, I can remember like my experience of going to school was desks in a row. You sit at your desk, you learn your stuff. If you finish the in-class work early, maybe you get to go play on the Apple II at the back of the room. There was always a race. But, you know, like, and some of that is still there, right? Like they're still there. Desks are sometimes in a row. Sometimes it's not desks, it's tables, or like there's a couch, or it really depends. Like some teachers go for the more traditional, just like everybody in a desk. Some of the teachers have a little bit less structured seating arrangement in the classroom, especially now. The less structured forms seem to be kind of predominating because it allows for people to space out more. There used to be times before the pandemic where I'd walk into the school because like my daughter had forgot her lunch or something, and I'd show up at the classroom and the teacher would be just like, she's out there somewhere. And I'd like turn around in the hallway and there she would be like under like one of the desks that's just kind of parked in the hallway for storage. She's curled up under there reading whatever book because it's, you know, they're just free reading time. I'm like, man, I never got to do that. But, you know, and so, yeah, in some ways it's the same. In some ways it's different. Obviously, there's a lot more technology involved now. Like everything is delivered electronically, basically. They still write tests on paper, but if they have like study materials or practice materials, that's all electronic, right? And if I need to print it out, well, I'm the one using up my printer ink, not they theirs. So,
unfortunately, not all the teachers are tech savvy, though. So the kids have to deal with different variety of teaching methods, and some of them can get confusing. And my son, he's like, I understand in English and in civics. Okay, I know exactly what to do because the teacher knows how to use this technology. Other classes, he's like, I have the slightest clue what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah, there's some of that too. Like, I guess we've been really just fortunate here in our school district that all the teachers have seemed to be supremely gung-ho. You know, like when the pandemic... And I know I've talked about this on the podcast before, but just to sort of quickly recap, like when things closed down around a year ago, a little more, and remote learning became the new reality, that happened for us on a Sunday. Monday morning, we had emails from all the kids' teachers saying, okay, look, next, you know, and basically like they had a week of school, then it was a week of spring break, and then it was classes would resume. So the stuff from the teachers was basically, look, okay, Like for the grades, for my eldest who was in grade 6 at the time, well, she was already using Google Classroom for most of her assignments and anything. So her teacher was just like, okay, well, here's Monday's assignments. Go to it. the one that was in grade 3 and the one that was in grade 1, their teachers sent basically, you know, their lesson plans for the week. Those got sent home along with any supporting materials that were needed. And, you know, they would do like daily check-ins. The first week was rough. Then we had spring break. Everybody just kind of took it easy for a week. And then when we came back, the district had just scaled up everything. So everybody had Google Classroom logins. Everybody who, like, you know, the younger grades had access to other tech like Seesaw. There were like daily Google Meet check-ins, sometimes multiple times a day Google Meet check-ins with the teacher talking with the class and leading them in, you know, instruction and just having one-on-ones with the students. My youngest daughter got in the habit of taking a lot of her chat sessions with the teacher or small group sessions with the teacher from the playset in the backyard, because apparently the Wi-Fi reached that far. So they were really good. And a lot of these were teachers who, you know, yeah, like you say, weren't necessarily the keenest on technology to begin with, but they were super, super keen on just teaching. And if that meant that they had to learn Google Classroom and Google Meet and Seesaw and Zoom and whatever else they had to learn in a week, then they did it. Yeah, and
they had their priorities straight, so it didn't really matter the method. They knew what the goal was.
Yep. And like now I look at, you know, what's going on in the US where some teachers' unions are just like, well, we won't go back to school even if our people are vaccinated because, you know, we can't guarantee these other safeguards or whatever else. And I'm just like, wow, literally every teacher in the district was just like begging to go back and get in front of the kids again. And it's just, I don't know, very different attitudes, which, you know, there you go. And these days, like it's, I mean, my kids are all back in doing in-person class. We're not even doing hybrid, right? Like it's just straight up all in-person every day. And so they're kind of back on, like the kid who was in grade 3, well, she's in grade 4 now, and they use Google Classroom from grade 4 onward. The kid who was in grade 1, she's in grade 2 now. So she actually doesn't really touch Google Classroom at all anymore because that's not part of the learning model that the district has really put down. That said, her teacher did send home some, she still has her Seesaw profile, which is like, it's another like online learning web app. So she still has her Seesaw profile. So this teacher got access to all the kids' Seesaw profiles and gave them a bunch of assignments to work on over spring break. So I don't know. We've been very fortunate, actually. Like the school districts, both of the school districts here, because Canada, so there's the Catholic school district and the public school district, and they are actually both part of the public education system. The districts here have just been amazing. But then, you know, I've talked to friends and family in Edmonton who, you know, they were like 3 months into the initial shutdown and they hadn't had one video meeting with a teacher yet. And maybe a handful of emails saying, well, as long as they're like reading 10 minutes a day, it's probably okay. So
you know, your district, you think that's coming from the example coming from the top down, or is this just like everyone all at once saying, hey, we got to do this because they all care?
Both. Definitely both. Like the district has good leadership. Actually just before this podcast, you know, the weekly email from the district, like the, I don't know if he's, I can't remember his title, president or chair or whatever, but the big G's.
Something like, you know, a superintendent of a school.
Yeah. Superintendent. Or... yeah. Something like that. So he sends out his weekly emails and, you know, lots of information, you know, commentary on where things are at with, the health of the schools, if there have been COVID outbreaks, things like that, where the province is at, you know, lots of communication. There's weekly emails from all the schools. So it really is, there is a lot of top down. There's a lot of, you know, just they're really keen on, you know, we have leadership that's definitely keen on making sure that, you know, we have, where possible, like we are open for business. We have students in classes, we have teachers in front of them, and everybody is just primed to learn. But we've also just been really fortunate with the teachers. It's just, you know, it's just been a bumper crop of really great teachers for the last couple of years, who, you know, just as individuals, as people, are like, no, like let's, they're so committed to just going as above and beyond as they need to do right by their students, which is nice to see, you know? They're not just clocking out until they get a pension. It's there's heart there, and that's nice.
Where were they when I was in school?
Right? Gosh.
I had one teacher at my high school that actively cared about whether or not the students were learning and remembering. The rest were either coaches the school didn't want to get rid of, even though they shut down their programs, or were basically telling, you know, were just, when a student asked questions, would say, "It's in the book. Why ask me?"
Oh man, I remember.
Check. I remember out.
I remember a health teacher, a health class teacher, which incidentally was a coach. I had a lot of rough feelings about coaches growing up. I don't know why. Probably didn't have anything to do with the fact that I was a chubby kid, but I remember this high school health teacher literally taking the textbook and getting in front of the class and reading the textbook in front of everyone and expecting us to take notes on the textbook being read. And we're supposed to turn in our notes of the textbook being read at the end of the week. And if we didn't have good notes, our grade would not be good. And that was a waste of time. Sadly.
My grade one teacher knew my family, like, basically, Edmonton's a big city, big enough, I guess, but there's a lot of, you know, rural communities around the area, and so my grade one teacher knew, like, she was, you know, she'd kind of grown up with my dad and a bunch of, like, she knew the family, my dad's side of the family from, like, childhood, and for whatever reason, she absolutely hated us. And she was like just crazy, crazy abusive to me all through grade one. She's a principal now, but I only stayed in that school for, yeah. Well, some people are very clannish, which is a problem we see play out in many, many areas.
Bear in mind, I live in the deep south of the U.S., so hearing somebody's very clannish means something entirely different down here.
Fair enough, but you probably also have the phenomenon that I'm talking about, right?
The people not liking somebody who's not from around there.
Or just not part of their group. Yeah, right? You know, yeah. Tribalism is another word for it. But
yeah, dealt with
the way Ukrainians, the way Ukrainians play it out is very not unlike Scottish clans, except genuinely nasty. Well, what do you do?
Again, go ahead.
Oh, no. You finish your thought.
Growing up in the Bible Belt, I'm very familiar with the concept of being an outsider.
Mm.
And not being part of the local accepted group, because you know how I've often made jokes about how redneck, how podunk the town I grew up in is.
Only every episode we've had you on, but yeah, go on.
It wasn't really as bad as I make it out to be. Admittedly, I do resort quite often to hyperbole. But
well, who doesn't?
It was very, one thing that was very bad was the very insular nature of the community. If you hadn't been in the community for at least two generations of your family, you were seen as an outsider. Outsiders were not liked, especially if you were an intellectual, especially if you were on the left side of the political spectrum, especially if you didn't go to one of the various local accepted church denominations.
Well, that would rule me out.
Believe it or not, it wouldn't. They did have a small group of Catholics in the region.
Crazy. Yeah, you know what? I mean, there's elements of that in a lot of different rural communities. Some better than others. Some better, some worse. I don't know. Ukraine. I know it mostly from Ukrainian culture, and there's just weirdness there. There's several layers of weirdness there. But to move us off of this topic, because yeah, you know, we could revel in it all night.
So games.
So, yeah, this is a thing, actually, that I wanted to talk about. So, you've all heard of Roblox, right?
Heard of it.
Okay, so, if you're not familiar with Roblox, it's mostly a kid's game, but the idea is, like, basically, I guess, technically, like, it's a weird one to describe. Like, it's a game, in the sense, but it's an online game in the sense that you log in, but there's not one game that you play. Like, it basically provides players with content creation tools. So they can, you know, essentially roll their own content and then other people can jump into that and play it. Now, over time, there's certain games created within Roblox that have kind of risen to the top and are, you know, very popular and commonly played. The thing about Roblox is, like, it's a very, very primitive 3D engine. It's not particularly sophisticated. It's not like Minecraft, but it's not, you know...
Is this R-O-B-L-O-X?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the website. They look like Legos.
Kinda, yeah. A lot of their marketing material looks like Lego bricks. So, anyways, I just discovered Core Games. So, take what I just said about the Roblox concept, but with Unreal Engine 4. So, again, it's like you log into the service, and there is, like, so Core Games is developed by Manticore Games. And, like, basically, again, like, the way it works is you log into the Core framework, and there, Manticore has actually created, like, a default module that will always be your landing point. So, you log in, and there's sort of this default game that you land in when you log in. But, just like with Roblox, you can back out of that and flip into the creative mode, and then you have a somewhat simplified presentation of Unreal Engine 4 at your fingertips with a large library of assets ready to go. I've been messing with it a little bit. I have not had a lot of time over the last week and a bit, but it's one of those things where it's like, I played with it just enough to start thinking that, you know, if somebody wanted to do something like a fan projecty kind of thing in here, this is not a bad way to go about that, because you've got the power of Unreal Engine 4 plus a library of pre-populated assets. And I'm assuming there's probably a way to allow multiple people to work on a particular piece of content. And then when you're done, you can just publish it into the Core Games community and people can enjoy it. There's also ways to monetize the content that you create, but obviously you wouldn't do that if you were actually making an Ultima fan project. That would end poorly. No. But, you know, for those who are just sort of more generally talented at developing content, like, there's a way to monetize your creations. And technically that's true in Roblox too. Manticore Games, though, they're basically like, their revenue model is probably one of the more competitive for this kind of service. I think with Roblox, the top tier creators there maximum pull about 25% of the total revenue that their content generates. Core Games is just like, nah, we'll go 50-50. But yeah, I tripped over that. I don't even remember how. I think I heard about it on a podcast, but it seems cool. And like I say, I played with it a little bit. There's definitely a lot of fantasy-themed assets. You can build castles and houses and whatnot with relative ease. And
when should we expect your Ultima 6 remake?
I don't know. By the time I'm 70? I've said this in another episode, the only other episode we recorded this year, but this 2021 has just been like the most stupid busy year I've ever had.
Oh, yeah. No, I was joking, because you should just offer like the automatic answer of all fan remakes, right? It's done when it's done, as if that's like an excuse.
Yeah, but realistically, I know myself. It ain't ever going to be done.
Mm. You know, where I work, it's just so many people just calling off from work. I have to fill in. It's very difficult to get started on anything. Of course, I have my own problem of just being scattered. I just have so many different things I'd like to do. I have a hard time concentrating on just one thing. You're like, oh, look at this guy I did on Facebook. Like, that's pretty good. I'd like to do that too. And I just am lacking the time to do it.
Yep. For me, it's just, I mean, I got so much going already. Like, what do you do?
You have to spend time with the family. You got to sleep. You got to sleep. Yeah. You got to work.
Exactly. And work has just been everything's been intense. Work's been intense. Family's been up to stuff. It's just, I don't get it. Like, we're still in a pandemic. Half of everything is still canceled. How is the calendar full? And yet it is. I seriously have not ever had a busy time like I have had busy times right now. At least my company will pay me for mileage incurred.
Mm.
And it's a generous reimbursement, well in excess of, you know, the cost of fuel. So
they're smart. They got to keep their most talented people from leaving.
Oh, we do right now. We lost three over the last year. Two guys took better jobs. And one guy was just like, nope, I am done with the industry entirely. I am going to go work at my parents' restaurant and campground. Yeah, I think he'll have a lot of fun with that, actually. But yeah, it's kind of left the rest of the team in a lurch. So, I mean, it's good, right? Because like we are supposed to be client facing. One of the ways that we're evaluated is, you know, literally how much time we are getting our butts in front of the clients. So it's good that we're having a lot more opportunities to do that. But at the same time, like the field team here used to be five. It's been cut to three. You know, two of the guys that left were based here. One was based in British Columbia. So yeah, we lost 40% of our field team just right out of the office. And we did not lose 40% of our clients to go along with that. So I have spent most of the last 3 weeks, especially just driving here, driving there, working with this client, working with that client, coming back home, working on this report. And oof, Monday morning, I'm on a plane up to north of Fort McMurray. But oh well, it is what it is. I'm glad that I do have work. That is certainly more than some can say at this time. So anyways, yes, Core Games. I think there could be a thing there. I just wish it ran a little bit better. But I mean, it's definitely not. Maybe I just have to tweak my settings. Oh, you know what it's probably doing? It's probably trying to run in full 4K. I keep forgetting. I run my monitor at like 1920 by 1080, but it's technically a 4K monitor. So maybe I should. Yeah, it behaves a little sluggishly right now, but maybe that's because it's trying to drive Unreal Engine 4 at 4K with a GTX 960, which is not going to fly. That is not going to fly.
All for 4K.
Yeah. So I should check that. But it was a thing that I found might be some fun times for anybody who actually wants to get out there and, you know, start developing fan projects.
Yeah, this way you don't have to concentrate on creating things from the ground up or from scratch. You can actually focus on the content, the creative part, or the plot and stuff like that. So I've been back and forth on a few games as to which one I would like to work with. And I mean, I've been leaning towards Skyrim, but that in itself is a learning process. So I take a look.
I really think there's a pretty low ceiling with Skyrim as far as what you can actually accomplish with it. I don't know. I may be wrong. I've played what's the big mod for that thing? It's like the same people that did Narim for Oblivion. Inderal, which sounds like a salve that you put on, but it's a mod for Skyrim that's like basically a total conversion. And it uses a number of mods as well to improve combat and things like that. Anything that gets Skyrim to feel a little bit more traditional, a little bit more challenging, can be pretty fun. But I don't know. I think there's a lot you can do with it, but I just don't know. It's just a lot of man hours. A lot of that's the difficulty, right? It's hard to accomplish anything fan-wise without time / skill / whatever, right? Because some of us may have had the skill and definitely had the time when we were younger, but not so much anymore.
Well, that was one of the things that kind of stood out to me about Core Games was the fact that, you know, because, yeah, time is always going to be a factor. You're never not going to be in a crunch for that. But at the same time, one of the areas where skill becomes, you know, a particular pain point is developing any kind of assets, right, to support your project. So the fact that, you know, Core Games is like, oh yeah, here, have a complete library of game assets that you can use to populate your world with. That kicks you ahead a bit, you know?
Yeah, it's such a time saver.
Yeah, I mean, you might still hit other roadblocks, but it's one thing.
What level of interactivity would there be with that engine, or would you need to work on that?
UE4 does tend to be more static, but I mean, I suppose anything's possible with scripting, and you do have a full scripting engine there. So, fun thing that I found.
Yeah, yet another thing to look at. Like I said, I mean, when I was doing Rebirth, I mean, I had an entire month during the furlough that I could just do whatever I wanted to. I just happened to have finished Ultima 4, the original. I said, well, let me go try some of these mods that other people have made. And I tried Avatar Ship once. I said, for some strange reason, I kept dying at the beginning of the game.
It's a struggle.
So when I saw Reborn, I said, oh, this is nice. I just couldn't read it. It was just the language was so hard. I said, I just took 2 weeks straight and just redid all of the conversations. And then I took another 2 weeks and redid all of the landscaping. Next thing I know, I said, well, this is interesting. I actually have something now. But I don't have an entire month to do that again.
Yeah, that's definitely a... But I mean, like, you know, and that's kind of the problem, right? Because like a lot of this stuff, you know, like someone will do a release of it and it's great. But then, of course, you know, a few years later, it'll need a rework and because stuff kind of moves on, right? I mean, you know, coming back to the idea of grog and artery, right? Like that's a thing that we kind of hate to admit, but it is depressingly or not, maybe not depressingly. Like it's a thing that's just true, you know, a thing that worked for a time a while ago might need some updates and some streamlining and some improvements to continue working for the next audience coming in a few years later. And that's all right. That's fine. Things develop. Things change.
I would say the crown jewel of the Ultima fan community, Ultima 5 Lazarus, is, I couldn't say it's unplayable, but it's pretty close to it these days. Something that really should be... It makes you wish that Dungeon Siege were more optimized because there's no reason to have the low FPS that you get running Ultima 5 Lazarus.
No, but yeah, you do.
And with that, I can't imagine there's going to be any kind of update that will help that.
Not for Dungeon Siege, no.
Yeah.
That ship has long since sailed. But, you know, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, well, at the time, I mean, nobody really thought that... Maybe nobody really thought that, you know, it was going to be that big of a deal because, you know, the computers that existed at the time that Dungeon Siege was current gen definitely would not be considered particularly performant today by any stretch of the imagination. And so, you know, something being able to just kind of chug along at 12 or 15 frames per second, like that was fine. Heck, even, you know, that was true even before 3D engines became a thing, right? Like, you know, you think about... Ultima 7, I think, caps out at 12 frames per second too, right? Just that's how fast the tile engine can redraw. Sure.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of one thing I really like about the more recent versions of Exalt, like the movement smoothing is really cool. Once they started doing that, I was like, yeah, this is nice.
Yeah, I tried that playing Ultima 7. It took some getting used to watching the avatar move, but your character, your companions don't move the same way. They jump while you're moving smoothly. So I'm like, okay, I got to focus my eyes on just the avatar as the screen nicely moves along.
That's true.
Sometimes they don't follow you perfectly. They get stuck behind doorways because you're moving, you're cutting corners, and they're trying to cut the same corners, but they're 2-3 steps behind you, and you're like, oh, I got to go back and get my companions because it's either that or walk, you know, half the town away before they pop in on you. I don't know. And then of course the Exalt version of the Black Gate was driving me nuts, especially in combat. I would go through a dungeon. You defeat the Cyclops, you defeat the wolves, you move on, you see the skeletons, you back up one step, and all of a sudden the Cyclops, the wolves are all back there again. You're like, oh great. Now I'm fighting I'm on two fronts now.
Oh no, multiple waves of monsters.
And he's like, okay, stand still. That's what I want the avatar to do. Just stand still while you're holding the sword. Because he's, you know, depending on the length of your sword or your weapon, he has to back up, then swing. The shorter weapon, he just goes in and fights. And every time he backs up, new monsters respawn. I'm like, ugh, respawning drove me nuts. I said, I don't remember Ultima 7 being this difficult on the original version.
Yeah.
Did you use the enhanced resolution? Because I don't remember having that issue on Exalt.
Yeah. I mean, I did have the screen expanded so you could see more of the world.
That's the problem. That's the problem.
Yeah.
You increased the visible area, then you're also increasing the range of activation of X.
Mm-hmm. They did a good job on the missile weapons. You shoot an arrow or a bolt, and it hits its target no matter what. Where in the original, you throw it and you miss, which is nice. I actually like the fact that you can miss. Of course, you can hit your companions in the back, but that's besides the point.
Well, just give Yolo a triple crossbow and get hit in the back all you need.
For some reason, he just wouldn't use. There's like a couple sets of crossbow bolts in the game where he simply refused to use them. So it must
or
be,
give everybody a fire doom staff.
Mm. Oh, and infinity the speed.
Ball. The infinity bolt.
For the serpent
maybe
exploding fireballs.
Maybe that one I don't remember. I never really used that one.
Because I remember using the infinity ball, and my party ended up dead because of the explosions.
Happens.
Oops.
Definitely happens.
Poor Avatar. Poor.
I kept using the hard glass.
I don't know. The Infinity Bow and Serpent Isle didn't seem that powerful to me, but I guess the fact that you can just shoot it infinitely, that was a nice thing.
You really wished that back when they released Divinity Original Sin that someone would come up with some sort of Ultima style mod there.
Hey, look, it's Golem Dragon. I was wondering when Bert would show up.
Hello. Oh, I just finished talking with the post-stream stuff, so.
Fun.
Just how many of us old farts are streamers? My God.
Hey, some of us are OG ones.
Golem's been streaming since before there were YouTube. Streaming platforms.
Before YouTube. I was on Ustream. I was streaming before Ustream. I was streaming before Joe Rogan streamed.
Well, you should have Elon years. Musk on your podcast.
Oh, he would be fun. Nah. I'm quite fine starting over after my years away of streaming to do other stuff. But no, I figured I'd peek in real quick, see what you guys were talking about.
The usual mixture of things. The usual mix.
Did Outriders come up at all?
No, we didn't mention Outriders. But,
here's something interesting. They're pulling a BioWare.
How so?
In the game, your characters all have powers. And the powers, you sometimes feel a little overpowered. They're really not. But they've decided to nerf a bunch of powers to try to make more builds more successful, I guess, or feel more enjoyable to do.
Ah.
Instead of lowering the skills that are bad, they're nerfing the ones that are good and fun to use, making them worse. And then they're nerfing the loot, so you get less of it, trying to basically extend the end of the game, the late game stuff, despite the fact that it's at a good level that's fun and satisfying.
So basically every live service trying to get you to spend more money on it ever.
Yeah, but it's not a live service game. Like, yeah, you have to be online to play it, but it's a single player game with optional co-op. You don't see any other players unless they're friends or you allow it to be open to other people. It's like Borderlands that way. But with the annoying SimCity online only when that first launched.
Oh, right.
Remember that horrible debacle by EA? Good job.
It has to be always be on. We can't fix it. And then suddenly some hacker has it done in days. And magically they're able to now.
Oh, day one, people already figured out how to stop the abnormally long, unskippable cutscenes before you even get to the main menu. That was wonderful. Once again, crazy. Gamers care about stuff and just find fixes because... We don't want to wait for them to drink their feet.
Fun.
Yeah. So they're trying. They're basically doing what Anthem did, and it didn't work for Anthem. It just pissed more people off.
Yeah, my son is extremely upset, or he gets extremely upset whenever they nerf the weapons in Splatoon. I said you had some perfectly good weapons. They did the job right, and then they just go around messing around with their statistics, and they just don't work the same way. It's just no fun anymore.
Just take the bad ones, make them better. And then it's fine. Mm-hmm. But no, you got to make the good stuff worse, and you're just making everyone miserable then. That's not fun. Games without PvP, it's okay to feel like a badass. Like, balance isn't quite as important.
Yeah, OP is okay.
I mean, how many times have we felt OP in different all sorts of fun games?
Well, given the fact that I know some people who don't like doing the Forge of Virtue because they say it renders all combat, or having gone through it, renders all U7 combat essentially moot because you're a walking god by the time you come out of it.
Don't care. It's still fun.
I just hit C and wait until everything's dead. I don't see a difference.
Who really wants to have, like, you know, a lot of game time spent in Ultima 7 on combat? I mean, I can understand if you enjoy, like, I enjoy the turn-based combat in the Divinity games. I'm not usually a big fan of turn-based combat because it can be a slog. That's why I hate playing the Final Fantasy games. I love a lot of stuff about those games, but I don't like playing them. But like the combat in Divinity it's an experience. And if you were extremely OP and it made it super easy, then it would feel like a slog. But finding your way around and figuring out, okay, maybe I can survive this if I do X, Y, and Z, you know, that's kind of a fun part of that game.
Yeah, sadly, it's the same thing in Wasteland 3. And the nice thing with Wasteland 3, you have friendly fire. So you can't do certain things unless you want to kill your own teammates.
So, like, no making with the rocket launchers at point-blank range.
No. That's very bad.
Talking about a rather uncase of unfriendly fire, if we're going to talk about Wasteland and associated games, people here know that the Fallout series were originally meant to be a sequel to the first Wasteland, but Interplay, Black Isle, you get the idea.
Yep.
Well, I remember playing Fallout 2 and finding out what happens if you set up dynamite in the bottom of an outhouse.
Well, that's always fun.
Good. So proud.
Of course, then I ended up doing things like having a shotgun wedding in the same village after setting up the poop bomb, and then kind of selling my husband into slavery.
Sounds like a good evening to me.
Yeah, see, what do you want to do tonight? Let's.
I'm seeing no problems.
And apparently that caused less karma than just getting a divorce.
The only thing missing is selling someone into slavery.
Well, basically it's a matter of a quest sort of thing. You can end up having a one-night stand with either a farmer's daughter or son. It doesn't matter what gender you are. And after he wakes you up in the morning, there is a literal shotgun wedding that goes on.
Oh, nice. Well, see, I never beat the original Fallout, sadly. I do like the game, but I don't know. Every time I've tried to replay it as an adult, it just... And I'm kind of ashamed of that because I've played the Bethesda ones and enjoyed them.
Kind of a different animal, but go ahead.
Oh, yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm just saying that the method of playing them... I mean, I enjoy it for what it is. I just never completed it. That's all. Nothing more than that, really.
And I have to admit, I've played Wasteland 1. I've beaten Wasteland 2. I can't say that I've tried Wasteland 3.
Third one's a lot of fun. I'm not done with it yet, but I killed Santa Claus and I've other fun experiences with it. I know Umbre's played it. He's having a lot of fun with it. We both generally consider it to be on par with the Game of the Year winner of Ghost of Tsushima.
Ah, right.
That's pretty high praise. You can't go wrong with that point.
Then I'll have to give it a better check than I did. But Wasteland 2, for me, got a Game of the Year for the year that I played it. If only because of my favorite NPC I ended up getting in my party, Scotchmo.
Oh, yeah, he's in the third one.
Oh, dear Lord. That's
for those who don't know, he's drunk and old, and it's hilarious.
And as random stuff is like, these aren't my pants. Somebody went to the bathroom in these pants, only he didn't say it that way. But, well, yeah.
Thank you for trying to preserve the podcast rating, but it's already too late. But thank you.
Well.
All right. I need to go to bed because it's already after midnight. I just wanted to peek in, though. So.
You know what? I actually have to start thinking about making my wife a snack anyways.
But
speaking of, I will catch you all later.
Yeah, it's nice to hear.
Golem, I've been wanting to ask you since you mentioned Outriders. Everything I hear about that game is either amazing, raving compliments, or absolute panning. There is no in between. So I wanted your opinion on it.
As the story is average and a little bit predictable. The combat's a lot of fun. If the servers hadn't gone down as much the first few days, it would get a solid 7 out of 10.
Because I was watching Jim Sterling's review on it. Controversy there anyway, but...
Yeah, Jim's playing on console, which is a little bit different experience.
And was complaining...
It's a lot buggier on console than PC.
They said as much, and compared the gameplay on the level of a Steam-style asset flip.
Okay, that's a lie. The devs for Outriders did Bulletstorm. They don't asset flip. They take actually pretty reasonable pride with stuff. There's a few bugs with the game, but they're pretty easy to forget.
Fair enough. I can't say I've actually played Bulletstorm, but I've heard good things. I remember...
If you ignore the server crashes, a 7 out of 10 is not bad.
Huh. Fair enough.
If you want to join the Ultimate Dragons, you can do so at udic.org, where you can choose your very own dragon name. You can also find the Ultimate Dragons on Facebook. We have a Facebook group there. And you can follow at Ultimate Dragons on Twitter, or join them on Discord. And if you're feeling really old school, you can even fire up a Telnet client and check out the Wearmount. Hit up the show notes for links to all of these. If you want to participate more directly in the podcast, you can send us an email. Or if you're feeling a little bit braver, leave us a voice message in one of three places: the podcast website, our Facebook page, or on anchor.fm. And you're also welcome to join us on our Discord server to chat with us, to lurk, or even contribute to podcast recordings when they happen. And again, links in the show notes. If you'd like to support Spam, Spam, Spam Humbug, you can do so at patreon.com/ultimacodex, where for as little as a dollar a month, you can get access to episodes the day before they go live to the general public. You'll also get access to behind-the-scenes audio when we have some to share, and possibly other interesting content. But we also welcome your moral support. You can like the Ultima series on Facebook, follow at Ultima Codex on Twitter, or leave the podcast a review on iTunes. And you're also welcome to share our episodes with your friends and social media circles. Spam, Spam, Spam Humbug is a production of the Ultima Codex. You can find show notes online at spamspamspamhumbug.com. Thank you for listening, and until next time, be virtuous.